Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram this morning. Kia ora, Rod. How are you today?
I'm Irina Rachel. Very well, thank you.
That is good to hear. There are some big things going on in the UK at the moment. Let's talk about what's happening in this race to be the next Prime Minister. Who is in the running? What's actually going on? Let's take it right back to basics. This is in the wake of Boris Johnson's basically forced resignation. Who is the front-running duo?
The two are Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, and they are the last two standing after a furious round of votes amongst just the MPs over the course of about 10 days in which the other candidates were eliminated. And Sunak has long been thought of as a likely next leader, but Truss has sort of come from behind to be a real challenger. And so the contest between them is very, very heated. I think it's very hard to predict who might be the winner. But very interestingly, there has been a poll overnight amongst the public that shows that Starmer, the Labour leader, is more highly supported by the public than either Truss or Sunak. So I don't know whether the Conservatives will take much note of that, but that's kind of how fluid this whole situation is.
So what is, if we kind of zoom out a little bit, what's happening in the bigger scope here? This is obviously within the Conservative Party, these two candidates vying for the leadership, which essentially means they become the Prime Minister. But when is the next general election, and what are we sort of seeing, maybe any shifts? As you said, Keir Starmer coming up as a front runner is an interesting new development. But what are you thinking we could be seeing in the future?
And the next election on the five-year schedule is about around 18, 20 months away yet. But an earlier election could be called because for a short time, the UK did have fixed parliamentary terms, but they decided a little while ago to biff that. So there could be a snap election at some time. The real problem, though, is that neither candidate is really honestly dealing with the issues. Mm. Brexit is a huge problem, and the sort of 6-hour queues at Dover to try and get across the Channel, the British are still blaming on the French. But this is exactly, for being obstinate on the other side, but this is exactly what was going to happen when traffic picked up again post-COVID and now in the school holidays. And similarly, there's a real unworldliness about the economic ideas that the two of them are putting forward. Sunak yesterday did a screeching U-turn and said that, oh yeah, well, perhaps we'll roll back VAT on fuel bills to help give people a bit of a break. Well, he'd been adamantly opposed to that. There's a great debate between whether to start cutting government debt now or later. So Truss is very much saying that I would cut debt sharply, but that would spur growth, which would give me more revenue, so that would balance the books. There's all sorts of reasons why that is probably wouldn't work. Sunak is saying, no, we will keep this level of debt until the economy stabilizes. Between COVID's a bit further behind us, the fuel crisis is over, and then we can work our way out of that. And it's a really interesting contrast because Sunak is the technocrat, if you like, a Goldman Sachs banker before he went into politics, always been absolutely on top of the brief. And it's interesting to see him now talking in counter terms to the way he might have been talking even sort of 6 months ago. So again, that's a sign of this extraordinary fluidity. And on top of that, Truss is very much trying to channel Thatcher, as the rightful heir apparent to Thatcher. And the Tories just can't let go of Thatcher. It's really quite fascinating. I think that is also very out of tune for a lot of the public, and not necessarily some Tory leaders, but that would make her very unpopular as a prime minister if she started to channel Thatcher.
I just wanted to briefly touch on something like that. I saw that yesterday or earlier this week in one of the debates, they were both asked about the railway workers' strike, which we've talked briefly about before with you, Rod, and they both said that they'd be interested in bringing in perhaps a ban on strike action, which is quite concerning and definitely sits in that Thatcher space. Have you heard much about this or seen much chat about what that could mean if something like that did come through?
No, that's an element of the story I hadn't picked up on, and so I've got nothing that I would.
That's all right. We can come back to that one another time. Let's talk about some leadership worries closer to home. The Green Party here in Aotearoa, they had their annual conference on the weekend, and there was a vote of no confidence upheld against James Shaw. Now their structure as a party is quite different to some of the other political parties. They have a sort of re-vote on the leadership every year, which is quite unusual. But what are you taking from the changes we've seen, and what do you think could happen from here for the Greens?
I still think it's very uncertain. There might yet be a contender against Shaw and thus an actual vote. And therefore, however, I would still be surprised, but mind you, we were surprised when this first broke, that he would lose that. My basic message to the Greens would be is that you've got to understand that we have to have legislative change to make a whole bunch of things happen that you want to happen, not the least of which on climate and ways to support people who are disadvantaged. But in order to get that through Parliament, you have to have a parliamentary majority, not just in your party or your coalition, but it really needs to be cross-party on the really big issues, as we sort of have on climate, not that I actually believe that that's that enduring on the National Party side. But you can only get that if you've done an awful lot of grassroots work. And so not just about campaigning for people, but working on the issues. And I think that's where the Greens are very patchy on that grassroots work. I think the other parties are very poor on it as well. And so by all means, be incredibly eager and feel it's very urgent to have big transformations, but start working on them sort of in the community, start building those coalitions at the local level to shift politics. So you then get the people ending up in Parliament who will, do cross-party votes on these big things. And I think that's what the Greens missing. It's difficult, very difficult for Shaw, because he spends a great deal of time on climate. Mm-hmm. He's the person who understands the issues far better than anybody else, and with a deep, deep background, when he was working in the UK for many years on his OE, doing climate work with companies and the rest. But he's also got, I think, considerable skills for building coalitions for legislation cross-party, as he did for the zero carbon bill. And then hopefully we'll be able to do a similar job on subsequent legislation. And but in doing that, that has obviously meant he spent less time with the party, and he's got to get that balance right. But I think the party needs to give him, needs to understand where his main usefulness is and where his main job is, and that's in Parliament, being very effective. And in the absence of him, we would have had, I'm not sure, quite honestly, where we would have had much in the way of climate policy at all and have made much progress at all. We haven't made anywhere near enough, but we've made more because of Shaw than we would go seriously backwards if he was no longer doing that job.
Well, it'll be definitely very interesting to follow that one and see how it goes. We haven't got much time for it, but I do want to get your thoughts on what's happening with the RBNZ and this ongoing debate about whether the stimulus was overcooked during COVID. What's some of the big things to be keeping an eye on with this conversation, Rod?
The biggest is whether there's going to be an inquiry, an independent inquiry into how the Reserve Bank carried out its mandate during the pandemic, as the Australians have had, have underway, and there are some other countries doing it as well. I think that's an important thing to do because, again, monetary policy and the role of the Reserve Bank has been we've had really steady pretty bilateral support for that for many decades now. And this is a time that the Reserve Bank's reputation is at risk, as is that political unity on how the framework by which we run monetary policy. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big thing to look out for. And it would also be very useful because we genuinely need the debate, because this is, you know, all central banks around the world have come in for various degrees of criticism about how they handled things during COVID, because it was so extraordinary. The Fed is getting huge abuse now and then for acting too slowly on inflation, huge criticism. We really need to understand what was going on here. And political tit for tats are not very helpful. Yes, we've had past Reserve Bank governors who are still around who are free to speak. Alan Bollard isn't, because he works in the government as chair of the Infrastructure Commission, have been very critical. But those criticisms need to be explored. We need to understand what was going on, because we will be needing to do similarly extraordinarily unusual things in the future, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
We'll have a better idea of what works and what doesn't.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Rod. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Thanks, Rachel. You too.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Rod